Yasodhanandana Prajajanarandana Yasodhanandana Prajajanarandana Amunatira Vanachari Amunatira Vanachari Jayara Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So reading today from the chapter, I think the title needs to be changed there. The Lord Begs Charity from Bali Maharaj. So it is Canto 8, Chapter 19, and Text 13. Vairanu Banda Etavan. Oh, sorry, everybody hasn't got the place yet. I'll wait. Go ahead. Okay. It's chapter 19, Canto 8, chapter 19, text 13. Amrityori hadenam Agnana prabhavo manyur Aham mano paprimita. Vairanyupanda etavan. Amrityoriha dehinam. Agyana prabhavo manyur. Aham mano paprimita. Varanyu Bandav Etavan Amrityoriha Dehinam Agyana Prabhavo Manyur Ahamano Prabrinhita. Please chant. Varanyu Bandav Etavan Amrityori Hade Nam Agnana Prabhavo Manyur Ahamano Prabhimrita Varanyu Banda Etavan Vairanyu Banda Etavan Amrityori Hadehinam Agyana Prabhavo Manyur Ahamano Prabhimita Vairanya Banda Etavan Amrityori Hadehinam Agyana Prabhavo Manyur Ahamano Prabhimita Vairanya Banda Etavan Amrityori Hadehinam Agyana Prabhavo Manyur Amano Prabhumita. So the translation for text 30, oh, I should do the word for word. Vairunya Bandaha Mandaha Enmity Etavan So Great Amrityaha Up to the point of death Sorry Iha In this Dehinam Of persons too involved in the bodily concept of life Agyana Prabhavaha because of the great influence of ignorance Manyaha anger, yes, sorry, I thought there was a correction on the on the Sanskrit so Manyuhu Anger. The light is not good and the Sanskrit is written in very light letters, so it's still difficult and I didn't rewrite it. By egotism. Apramabhitaha. Expanded. Translation. Hiranyakashipu's anger against Lord Vishnu persisted until death. Other people in the bodily concept of life maintain anger only because of false ego and the great influence of ignorance. Purport. Generally speaking, even though the conditioned soul is angry, his anger is not perpetual but temporary. It is due to the influence of ignorance. Hiranyakashipu, however, maintained his enmity and his anger against Lord Vishnu until the point of death. He never forgot his vengeful attitude towards Vishnu for having killed his brother Hiranaksha. Others in the bodily concept of life are angry at their enemies, but not at Lord Vishnu. Hiranyakashipu, however, was everlastingly angry. He was angry not only because of false prestige, but also because of continuous enmity towards Vishnu. Om Gyana Timurandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Namom Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Ramapada Swami Tinamine Namom Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Tinamine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Pashacha Desha Tarini Panchakalpa Tarubhyas Chakripa Sindhubhyeva Chapatitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhakti Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare. So it begins begin this by looking at a particular statement of Srila Prabhupada's here, that Hiranyakashipu maintained his anger and enmity against Lord Vishnu until the point of death. And the reason he had for this anger against Lord Vishnu was the death of his brother Hiranyaksha, and this was at the hands of Lord Vishnu. And the reason given by Srila Prabhupada for Hiranyakashipu's anger is that he had a sense of false prestige, and he had an ongoing nature and the ongoing nature of his anger towards Lord Vishnu was such that he had a determination to maintain a particular point of view. And this point of view that he was maintaining, because you have to have a point of view to maintain your anger, so his point of view was this one. The Supreme Person within this universe, Lord Brahma, has gotten his exalted post by dint of severe austerities, mystic power, and trance. Consequently, after creating this universe, he has also become the most worshipable demigod within it. Since I am eternal and time is eternal, I shall endeavor for such austerity, mystic power, and trance for many, many births, and thus I shall occupy the same post occupied by Lord Brahma. So he's got a particular view, and I'm bringing this up because I want to paint a picture of Hiranyakashipu. So Hiranyakashipu was thinking that if he couldn't occupy the post of Lord Brahma in one lifetime, he would continue to execute austerities just life after life. That was his determination. Now, Hiranyakashipu was actually the king of the demons at this point when he was holding this view. So he's called the king of the Daityas. And the sense of prestige that he had was such that he was determined to acquire a post by virtue of the brilliance of his particular achievement. So... And Narada Muni, he has a conversation with Maharaj Yudhisthira, and he looks at this view that is being held by Hiranyakashipu. And this is in the seventh canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, in the third chapter, where Narada Muni is giving his insights into Hiranyakashipu. So, Hiranyakashipu is wanting to be, just to frame it, Hiranyakashipu is wanting to be not only king of the entire universe, but he's also wanting to include Brahmaloka in his sphere of control. So the achievement he had in mind, the goals for his austerities, so he had certain goals. I'm going to enumerate them. His goals were, he wanted to be unconquerable, so he didn't want to have any rival or any opponent. He wanted to be free from old age and from having his body break down or diminish. And he also wanted to attain yogic perfections, you know, such as being able to become very small or very large at his own will. So he had a particular, you could say, mental condition and a particular egoism. This kind of mental state, this egoism that accompanies the mental state, it's kind of present in the entire category of persons that fall into the category of those opposed to Lord Vishnu, so the demoniac entities. So this is how Lord Krishna describes it. Now, he puts it very clearly. He says, perplexed by various anxieties, so this is the root cause, and bound by a network of illusion, they become too strongly attached to sense enjoyment and fall down into hell. So it's a different picture here. You're getting these goals, this sense of great egoism on the part of the demoniac person, and Lord Krishna actually breaks it down into being base. The whole basis for it is anxiety, a whole series of anxieties, and that they're actually completely bound up in illusion. So, and that's from Bhagavad Gita 16:14, that particular description. So, looking at what the particular anxieties are that are underlying Hiranyakashipu's work, one can infer from what he's outlined as his particular goals that he's needing to avenge his brother's death. And in the case of his undertaking austerities, the anxiety that he had was the possibility of being conquered, or his body losing its prowess. And underlying everything was a particular belief that he held. And that belief was in the strength of his own efforts. So you can see the anxiety, the particular belief, but the huge anxiety because the belief is shaky, like extremely shaky. So Srila Prabhupada, he explains that the demoniac person doesn't think to perform sacrifice. It's just not there. But rather, they manufacture. So it's all coming from the mental plane. They manufacture a process of sacrifice or yajna to reach the higher planets. Because you can't accept the existing system, because then that implies acceptance of authority. So for the demoniac person who's holding the belief that everything rests on their own strength, there has to be something that they decide is sufficiently austere for them to allow to be able to get to where they want to go to. So Hiranyakashipu, this was how he chose what his manufactured austerity was. It's described that he was standing with his toes on the ground, keeping his arms upwards and looking towards the sky. That was his austerity. So on his toes, arms raised and looking upwards. It didn't involve anybody else. That's all he did. Just utilized his own body. And Narada Muni, he says something about this. He says, this position was extremely difficult, this is him commenting, but he accepted it as a means to attain perfection. So Hiranyakashipu, the demoniac mentality, understands you have to undergo some difficulty to get to your goal. So he chose his own particular difficulty, he used his body, and one knows that, you know, great tiredness happens if you aren't resting flat on the ground, or great tiredness happens to the arms if they're upraised as opposed to in a more relaxed position. So he just did the unrelaxed positions for the body. Now, the effects of this manufactured austerity on the part of Hiranyakashipu, it also actually produced alarming effects. And because he's doing an austerity, I mean, it's his from his own mental creation, but he's doing an austerity. So this is what happened. These were the alarming results of his austerity. Because of the power of his severe austerities, all the rivers and oceans were agitated. The surface of the globe, with its mountains and islands, began trembling, and planets fell. All directions were ablaze. So this is a description given of the effects of his austerity in the seventh canto and the third chapter. In fact, the demigods were so disturbed that because there was a fire that started coming from Hiranyakashipu, the top of his head. So, you know, the bodily elements get disturbed. So I guess the pitta rose and it manifested as fire from the top of his head. So anyway, he the demigods were so disturbed because this heat generated from Hiranyakashipu's head was so great that actually they were getting scorched. They could actually feel that heat, and it was so intense. And so they actually had to leave their planets of residence. And so they went to seek Lord Brahma's assistance to stop the disturbance. Because they understood that Hiranyakashipu's austerities were destructive. There wasn't a positive end. It was merely for him to achieve his particular goals, which were destructive in themselves, and it was causing destruction to everybody else and all the entities. I mean, rivers, oceans, everything. And in this particular chapter that we're on, it's in a similar way, or it's a similar approach that Hiranyakashipu uses in his attempt to revenge his brother's death. When he hears the news of his brother's death, the first thing that comes is great anger, and he immediately goes to the residence of Lord Vishnu with the intention of killing Lord Vishnu. So, I thought to examine a little bit the way that Hiranyakashipu is bound by illusion. So the first thing to look at, his particular goal of attaining Lord Brahma's post. Now, the duration of Lord Brahma's life is such that by human calculation, it's 1,000 ages taken together. And that comprises one of his days. and that's also the duration of his night. So 1,000 cycles are 4 yugas. The Satya Yuga, the Tetra Yuga, the Dvapara Yuga, and Kali Yuga. 4 of those yugas comprise a kalpa, or a day of Lord Brahma's life. So actually, you could say it was impossible for Hiranyakashipu to occupy the post of Lord Brahma. I mean, that's the duration. I mean, he's not in that dimension of Lord Brahma. So from the human perspective of time, it's a huge, huge length of time. So completely unreasonable, the Hiranyakashipu's particular goal of attaining Lord Brahma's post. And you could say that it was certainly a kind of demoniac determination that Hiranyakashipu was holding on to, because just looking at this particular reasoning to pursue this particular attachment of attaining Lord Brahma's post, I mean, it's completely unreasonable. And but this is how he reasoned, and it's very interesting, his reasoning. He's thinking the self, the Atma, so he understands the existence of soul, is eternal. And time is eternal. So, as an Atma, he would continue to execute his austerities life after life. That's his reasoning. Because there's no concept of karma for the demoniac person. So, he's just completely fixed in his determination to execute particular goals. So the concept that there's control or there's reaction by laws that are existing in the universe is not within the demoniac mentality. So for him it's quite clear, oh well, just life after life, he'll continue, he'll get to the post of Lord Brahma. Then the further illusion that Hiranyakashipu was under was that egoism that he had. And this was understood by the demigods. And they expressed their understanding when they're speaking about Hiranyakashipu to Lord Brahma. So these are their words, because they're recognizing this personality and the particular egoism. So they say, by dint of... So they are putting words to Hiranyakashipu's egoism, his outlook. So these are the words they're using to paint the picture of Hiranyakashipu's intentions, because they're talking to Lord Brahma. So they say, by dint of my austerities, I shall reverse the results of pious and impious activities. I shall overturn all the established practices within this world. So they know what's deep in the heart of Hiranyakashipu. So what they understood was that Hiranyakashipu imagined that by virtue of his austerities, he was going to actually override any system of universal management. And this kind of attitude or outlook, Lord Krishna also pinpoints for the demoniac mentality. He says, in charge of the various necessities of life, the demigods, being satisfied by the performance of yagya sacrifice, will supply all necessities to you. So Lord Krishna is painting that picture of the universal management that Hiranyakashipu is completely, not attending to. He may have a sense of it, but he believes by his own strength he's going to override it. So... all the different yagyas that are performed by different demigods, they ultimately offer to the Supreme Lord. Or anything that's any yagya that anybody performs to the demigods is ultimately offered to the Supreme Lord. And in fact, those yagyas are meant to allow for the elevation or the gradual elevation to the higher planets. And Hiranyakashipu's egoism was so great that he wished for all persons to be unhappy, even in the heavenly planets. Unhappy, even in the heavenly planets. despite the fact that they may have been performing austerities for promotion to the heavenly planets. So that was actually his great egoism. Yeah. So this enmity that Hiranyakashipu was maintaining towards Lord Vishnu, which is what we're hearing here, meant he was maintaining his own anger. You require anger or towards somebody to have ill feeling towards them. So the two go together. So the whole mental state, the thoughts connected to that personality, maintain the anger. So the illusion that kept Hiranyakashipu bound was that he was thinking that Lord Vishnu could be killed. This was the one premise that everything was resting on. Lord Vishnu could be killed. And the reason he thought this was that he thought of Lord Vishnu as an ordinary human being. That's as far as his thinking went. And in fact, he thought that Lord Vishnu had a particular kind of mind. He even went so far as to think what sort of mind Lord Vishnu has. And you could say that Hiranyakashipu was projecting his own reality. because he obviously was subject to his own patterns within his mind, so he's projecting them. So here's what he's thinking Lord Vishnu's mind is like. Although he is the Supreme Person, now influenced by Maya, he assumed the form of a boar to please the devotees, the demigods. Just as a restless child leans towards someone, I shall sever Vishnu's head from his trunk by my trident. And with the profuse blood from his body, I shall please my brother Hiranyaksha, who was so fond of sucking blood. Thus, I too will be peaceful. So this is Hiranyakashipu's thinking and his understanding of Lord Vishnu's mind. That, you know, it's like a child, very restless, you know. So obviously this is part of the illusion that Hiranyakashipu is bound by, because he's thinking that Lord Vishnu is actually favoring the demigods because the demigods are worshipping him. So, you know, it's got to be sort of on a kind of exchange level. And this is illusory because we know that actually Lord Vishnu is equal to all living entities. that's Samoham Sarva Bhuteshu from 9:29 in Bhagavad Gita. So, and in fact, this is how he puts it himself. I envy no one, and I am partial to, nor am I partial to anyone. I'm equal to all. But whoever renders service unto me in devotion is a friend, is in me, and I'm also a friend to him. So that's Lord Krishna giving the outline of, you know, how he views everyone and his impartiality. Hiranyakashipu, he's accusing the Lord of being partial. So, you know, when you're an angry person, the first thing you do is throw out accusations. So he's accusing Lord Vishnu of being partial because those demigods are worshipping him. And this is how he puts it. Although the Supreme Lord is equal to both of us, namely the demigods and the demons, this time, being devotedly worshipped by the demigods, he has taken their side and helped them kill Hiranyaksha. So he's seeing partiality, because clearly there's some projection of his own reality. So it looks like that's as far as I got in my painting the picture of Hiranyakashipu and his very great determination in a particular direction, and also the very illusory nature of that determination, since it's so clearly, transparently not in accord with reality. So those are some thoughts that came on this particular verse.
Jordan. Hare Krishna Mataji. It was a very nice class. Thank you for giving it. I have a question about you mentioned Hiranyakashipu's austerities. I didn't hear what you said. What did he concoct?
His manufactured austerity, because in everything he had the belief that everything rested on his own strength, and his particular anxiety was to lose some prowess of his body, but he put his body through difficulties. So he stood on his toes, raised his arms upwards, and looked upwards. So it's a very uncomfortable position. But that was his manufactured austerity, staying in that position. And he maintained it so much so that, you know, fire started coming from the top of his head. So that was his austerity.
Do you want to go over to you? The point of austerity, right now I'm studying Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, and Maharaj Parikshit is asking, Shukadeva Goswami is saying that what is the use of bed if you're earth to sleep on? What is the use of bed if you have earth to sleep on? What is the use of pillow if your arms to sleep on? And what is the use of plates if your hands? Then Parikshit Maharaj is asking the question that in the two verses he's explaining the austerity. He's saying that what is the use of, can you not find the tear clothes on the road? Or there is not enough trees to give you shelter, so you need a house. So he was mentioning some of the austerities, and Parikshit Maharaj is saying that why you're asking me to do this austerity, this hard simplicity, is really required for the meditation on Krishna. Is Parikshit Maharaj is asking the question, is this kind of austerity is really required for meditation on Krishna? And Sukadeva Goswami is saying, yes, it is required, because if you don't do the austerity, you come in the comfort zone. And if you go in the comfort zone, then the meditation on Krishna will become very difficult. So devotee also do austerities, like Prahlad Maharaj, Dhruva Maharaj, they are doing like amazing austerities. Like Dhruva Maharaj was, for first 2 weeks he was eating bale fruits. Even the monkey doesn't eat that fruits. And then he was drinking water for the next week, and the last week he was just eating, breathing. He was just breathing. So the purpose of the devotees to austerity is to get Krishna. And if the austerity is not making them soft, and rather than making hard, there is no use of austerities. So that's what I'm getting from your class. It's a beautiful point. Thank you.
Thank you, Parma Karina. That's a very nice point that you made, just contrasting it with the devotees. Purpose for performing austerities, and in fact the particular effect on the heart that it has from performing austerities, that you were pointing out, that the heart actually gets softened as opposed to getting hardened, as in the case of Hiranyakashipu. That's a fantastic point. Yeah, and actually I think the point you brought up of that the difficulty with not performing some austerities that involve physical discomfort, that it moves one away from Krishna, at least from personal experience. I can say that it brings one more into the body, awareness of the body and comforting the body. So performing the austerities that are a kind of neglect of the body actually assist in bringing one's attention more sharply to Krishna. I've certainly had that experience. And in fact, it's interesting because in many ways, through performing Bhakti Yoga, one doesn't have to specifically decide, I'm going to do without this or without that. Just automatically, through the performance of service to Lord Krishna, there's just a natural falling away of wanting comforts for the body. So one may sleep in a bed with a pillow, and as opposed to lying on hard ground and using one's arm as support for the head, but then the day that stretches out ahead of us, where we, you know, we have various services to perform, is such that there's just enough time to maintain the body, just enough time to keep it intact for the real purpose. Yes.
It's automatically, you don't have to strive harder, and depending upon your qualification, you will do it. You don't have to, no one has to say you that Prabhu, or, the more you eat, the more you're satisfied, something like that. So I really appreciate that point. We don't want to extra bend over.
Yes, thank you. John, you've been very patient. Thank you very much.
So we should be going back.
Just a small reflection on what was just discussed, because I very much appreciate this topic. In terms of the austerity, I think, the mentality behind it is really what makes the difference there. I mean, in practicality toward devotional life for devotees, like just in a recent lecture, someone was saying that in the past there are many grihasthas living here, and the situation was very austere. There are so many devotees living here, and the situation was austere, but they were very happy to undergo that austerity because of their desire to serve. Whereas in this perspective, I'm thinking the healthy austerity is that you have a strong desire to serve Krishna, and thus one is willing to undergo any austerity to do that, and actually it doesn't feel like austerity because one's engaged in devotional service. I think the dangerous perspective is thinking that by sleeping without a pillow and by doing these things, that by doing those things, I will become more conscious of Krishna. Whereas actually, the next day, you're just going to be tired and you're going to be more conscious of your bodily condition. Yeah.
It's a very nice point. There was Brahmachari in one of the temples that I resided in who would often say that it was necessary to be as cold as possible, to to eat as little as possible. But I think Paramakaruna's point definitely applies, because what was actually happening was that the heart was getting hardened. So yes. It led to becoming offensive to devotees, like, you know, the comfortable grahastas, or, you know, like that. So, yes.
The reason I raised that point about austerity of Parikrama is just that I was studying the chapter. So it was not to say anyone that you should do this. It's totally impractical to do those kind of austerities. It's not applicable to us. Parikshit Maharaj was at a very high advanced level. So I was talking about Parikshit Maharaj. I was not talking about Bhakta or initiated devotee. Okay? So that's the thing that I was talking about, how the austerity is important. Not how we should do it. We should not imitate Parikshit Maharaj by sleeping on the floor without pillow. That's not my point was. My point was austerity is necessary. Like waking up 4 o'clock in the morning, that's austerity. Chanting japa in front of Tulsi, that's austerity. Controlling your mind, talking with the devotees, that's austerity. Those are simple austerities. We cannot even follow those austerities. What the hell we are talking about sleeping on the floor without pillow? That's far out, Prabhu.
Just to be clear, I wasn't making any presumptions about the point you were making. The thought I had earlier in terms of the anger he was having and that desire for other people to be unhappy. And I was, I mean, this is the first time I've ever meditated on that concept. And if I may, I was thinking about how I relate to that, because I very understand, you know, the demoniac mentality, is that... when one has this perception that someone in authority, in Hiranyakashipu's case, Vishnu, right, has acted unjustly, right? So then the perception that whoever is existing on the umbrella of that authority, whoever is happy, they're unjustly happy. Therefore, the desire is for them to be unhappy, because the perception is, oh, you have no right to be happy because your happiness is existing under the umbrella of an authority which I perceive to be unjust. I have...
Thank you for taking it further in terms of logic. Thank you, Jani Tagorari. Yes, that would certainly apply. He's not at any point unconscious of the fact that there's favor given by Lord Vishnu, because he in fact states it. He's generally impartial. He gives equally to demigods and demons. So there's an understanding that there's that umbrella, being under his umbrella, just as you pointed out. There is that understanding, so thank you. It's a very nice conclusion to the logic. And in terms of the earlier point that Paramakaruna was... concerned with, that there may have been a misunderstanding that one should take up particular austerities. I think it's just responding, Paramakaruna Prabhu, I think it's quite clear that what you were examining was the effect of those austerities, and therefore the question of necessary or not necessary. And you find also in Nectar of Instruction there's a very clear layout of which austerities shouldn't be done. So, you know, you're going collecting, but then are you actually going collecting more than is necessary? So then, you know, you have to always take a step back and examine the were you deliberately doing an austerity, or it's part of your service? You have to examine the that mentality part, the motivation with which you're doing it. So, yeah. Yes, Jordan's patiently been waiting. Thank you very much, Jordan. That is very kind of you. Let the flow go. Thank you.
No problem. I'm wondering if you can speak about anxiety, concept of anxiety. Like, what is anxiety specifically? Also, in the lives of practicing devotees, I think we sometimes still have experiences of anxiety. So how does it manifest? How do we deal with it? And things like that.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. It becomes, my observation has been that anxiety gets more pronounced when one's practicing devotional life. And the reason it gets more pronounced is because one becomes more conscious when one has turned one's attention a little bit towards, you know, sense gratificatory things mentally or subtly. And the anxiety becomes much more pronounced because one has the knowledge that, oh, I need to re-divert my thinking. And that anxiety can also be connected to one's mental state at a particular moment in time. And because through the process of purification, a particular mental state presents itself at a certain time. So it's as though everything else has fallen away and one is just having to look at one aspect of one's mental condition or, yeah, state. And that can be anxiety provoking. I mean, Krishna is deliberately displaying that aspect of one's mental state and one's having to look at that. And what takes away the anxiety or helps to cope with it and not have it be such an enormous thing is just feeling extremely grateful that one has had that be shown to one. Because one could have remained oblivious to the existence of those pockets in one's mind, but somehow Krishna brings it to the forefront and then one has to actually look at it. And, you know, it's, you have to work through it and then discard things, sort through things. And so there's work involved, but the underlying gratitude for having been shown those parts, however difficult it is, that one has to examine it, because it's on the subtle plane, but one has to do that, that allows for the anxiety to subside a great deal. It's a thought that comes to mind.
Hare Krishna, thank you for your class. You made a lot of wonderful points that I wrote down, but I'm going to have to edit it. So, and it's kind of related to some of your points you made, and similar to what Padma Karuna, the same point I was going to make. I'll try to expand on it a little bit. He was making a point that if your heart, austerities are useless if your heart doesn't become soft. And there's actually a nice purport that Prabhupada mentions this whole aspect that the purpose of austerity is to give up one's egotism. He says actually the goal of austerity is forgiveness, humility, and this is from the Bhagavatam. It's a really nice purport, Canto 6, Chapter 4, Verse 5. And please read that purport if you. But that's kind of related to my point, is that we have a festival of the Holy Name, and we could chant so many rounds, but if we had a festival of apologizing, I think that would be much more difficult for us to do, you know, because like Hiranyakashipu is holding on to anger. And my original question was directed towards the point is, when we come to Krishna consciousness, when we meet devotees, we could easily give up our anger, like Hiranyakashipu, he was angry, so we were very fortunate that when we meet devotees. Like there's a verse that says, Krishna yadi kripa kade konya bhagyabhane, guru antayami rupe shikoya pane, that by the mercy of Guru and Krishna, one is bhagyavane, fortunate. And when I hear the word fortune, I always think of the lottery. Now that we won a spiritual lottery. But in the material world, we can see that so many people, even though they have won the lottery, they plunder it. And my question is related to this point is that we may be able to give up our anger when we come in devotional association. But the tendency is that we plunder it because we come to the concept of Krishna consciousness like Hiranyakashipu that everything should go my way. And then when it doesn't go our way, we plunder our anger, you know, all of a sudden anger goes away, but then it reemerges that, oh, I'm the controller. So it's just like a bhakti sastri class. We take so much tests, we pass so many tests, but if we're reacting the same way that people who haven't even heard of Gita or, you know, bhakti sastri, what's the use? So that's my kind of related to that question, is that it's easy to perform the austerity of giving up one's false ego when things are going your way, give up your anger. But the tendency is that we become, you know, we immediately convert to, you know, Hiranyakashipu's religion when things don't go our way. And so that's kind of my question, is that actually it's kind of related to the point that committing mistakes, we all commit mistakes, but it seems like that's also a good thing in one sense, because if we had integrity all the time, then you know, it's hard to be humble when you have good integrity. So how important is it to not try to cover our mistakes, basically? That's my question. Is that we're going to become angry, you know, when things don't go our way, we're going to commit mistakes. So, you know, what are some steps we could do to not always try to cover up every single mistake we do, just so we could, you know, bring glory to ourselves? So that's kind of my question.
Okay, so the question is, one is actually with devotees, and somehow one may make a mistake through allowing anger to surface, and how is it that one can actually prevent such a mistake? And it went along with the part that you brought up earlier, which was the concern that there's a kind of plundering of devotee association. So the implication is that that emergence of anger would be a kind of plundering of that association. Well, Hiranyakashipu's anger was explained by Srila Prabhupada as he's maintaining a certain sense of himself. He holds a certain concept of himself. So the concept is being challenged. So the concept he has is, you know, everything rests on his own strength. He has to avenge the death of his brother. He has a goal to take a not only control the whole universe, but have Brahmaloka under his control too. And here he's noticing that somebody has been, Lord Vishnu, that somebody has actually, in some sense, challenged his sense of himself, his egotistical sense of himself. And that challenge was somebody dear to him has got killed. Lord Vishnu has taken on the form of a boar and has clearly assisted the demigods. So he's now seen a rival. And that challenges his concept of controlling the whole universe. Somebody had control of some areas that he couldn't intervene in. The demigods were assisted, his brother, his close relative, was killed. So that was anger that he maintained because it went contrary to the concept he's holding within his mind of himself, of, you know, controlling everything. So if one is coming into the association of devotees, naturally there's some egotistical ideas one has of oneself, because one's after all been in the functioning in regular society where the whole emphasis is on competing, and then there's judgments that are made, and there's even cruelty that can be performed to maintain one's sense of oneself. So one may be bringing all sorts of things like patterns of behavior that one has learned through one's functioning this lifetime, other lifetimes. So here one comes into the association of devotees and the emphasis is on discarding that ego. And in fact, the internal conceptual realm, the ego then gets changed to one of, I'm actually subservient to any devotee. I'm subservient to Lord Krishna. And this is not so easy for the ego to take, to make that switch. I mean, the fact that one has some faith in the process of devotional service allows one to at least accept that that kind of change in the ego has to happen. So one may take the new understanding of what the ideal ego is, the subservient position, but one may not be able to actually put it into practice because after all, one's still walking around on the subtle realm with this whole big ego that, you know, was shaped lovingly and maintained this lifetime, maybe other lifetimes that it's been traveling with one. So it's very natural that one has to go systematically through the pains of the ego surfacing, and then that one has to decide what course of action to take. So the important thing is to not try and or try to not let it become externalized, the functioning of that false ego. Yes, yes, that is the difficult part. So, yeah, that's the difficult part. So yes, indeed, that you could call that the austerity. Yes, indeed, that's the austerity. So, so you know, one may mentally have angry thoughts, but to externalize it, then one is definitely got into dire straits. One cannot. Well, yeah, there's that, or rather, and also one may then lose one's taste for performing devotional service, and it's quite subtle because, you know, just one minute one was in a certain environment with a certain open heart, and the next minute the heart is closed. And that's because of externalizing what's present there in the false ego. So very important not to externalize it. Rather go and hit a piece of paper and write. My favorite advice. Because when you see things on paper, you've put it out of yourself. You're no longer walking with it. So if it's anger, you go and write down all those angry thoughts. Nobody's going to read it. You may not even have to read it yourself, but you've got it out. But it's in a safe place. Very safe. No danger. And even then it doesn't matter because you've purged yourself. I mean, in there's another question. I had a short class, so that's open to a lot of questions. Thank you.
I don't really have a question. I'm just going to add to what you were just saying, to writing something down. Is something I'll do sometimes is I will repeat what my mind says and repeat its rationale, and by doing that, it's so absolutely ridiculous that I instantly drop it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That's the beauty of putting things on paper, because the mind, after all, is made up of feelings and a lot of irrational thoughts. It's not directly connected to reality. It's some bygone reality, some pattern that formed itself from some interaction there, and the mind kind of blends things. It's very confused. So when you actually see it written down, and you indeed, as Brad says, you look at it and you think, huh, no. And then you can even You can even help yourself further. You can use your intellect and write a rational thought. And you'll remember that rational thought the next time that same irrational pattern in the mind emerges. You can actually use that rational thought you wrote down with the intellect to assist yourself. Because after all, you are determined to destroy that ego. There's no necessity for it. It's an encumbrance. It's an encumbrance in one's devotional life. It's an encumbrance in one's dealings with those that one really wants to be subservient to, the very great personalities that are trying their level best to worship Lord Krishna. Go, we've got time.
And just to add to the writing thing, even if one's mind is so far gone that you're deriving some sick pleasure from writing it, still write it down, and that also will go away.
Yeah, because the main thing is you don't want to externalize it, because that is dangerous. Then you've actually gone with that as being your reality, which is what Hiranyakashipu is doing. He's going with what the patterns are, and he's acting them out. So you're doomed. Thank you very much for the class. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Oh, is that the term? Fantastic term. Yes. Yes, fantastic term. Very safe. Ha ha ha.